SB 73 dealing with early retirement for PERS and TERS, and also SJR 30 dealing with the Job Corps site. We're not on teleconference for the first bill we'll take up is SB 73, and we're not on teleconference, but we do have a couple of people standing by on SJR 30. Senator Duncan is bill sponsor. Do you want to start off testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will give some introductory testimony, and I'm sure there are others here who want to speak to the bill, and there's probably those who can answer some technical questions on the legislation much better than I can. If you'll recall, in 1986, we did pass legislation establishing at that time the retirement incentive program, and in the purpose of the bill, it stated that the purpose was to reduce the hardship of layoffs and intended to result in a net reduction of personal services cost to the state or other employer during periods of declining revenue. The program that was established in 1986 ran from 86 to late 1987, allowed an incentive credit of 3 years to employees in the public employees retirement system and the teachers retirement system. During that window period, according to the information that's been provided to us, a total of 2,327 public employees, which includes teachers, state employees, university, and municipal employees, took advantage of the retirement incentive program. The bill which is before you, Senate Bill 73, would reestablish that program, and as written now, would allow a three-month application period in 1990, a separate three-month application period for state employees, for teachers, for municipal employees, and University of Alaska employees. Under the bill and under the program as originally established, a three-year credit can be added to service years or age depending on the individual's requirements for retirement in the following order. 3 years can be added: one, to meet the age or service required for eligibility for normal retirement, or two, to meet the age required for early retirement, three, to reduce the actuarial adjustment required for early retirement, or four, as years of credited service for calculating retirement benefits if the person is already eligible to retire. Under the program, if the employer elects to participate, long-term employees are provided an incentive to retire, but the decision on whether or not each employee chooses to participate in the program is entirely at the employee's option. So it's an optional program for the employer to participate. It's also optional for the employee. The program does require that participating employees pay the amount that they would have paid into the retirement system had they continued to work for 3 years at the same salary. So there is an employee contribution. There was in the former program, and that employee contribution is being continued in this program. The remainder of the actuarial cost of the retirement incentive is then paid by the employer. Recently, and I think you all have copies of the audit, we tried to forward them to you to be sure you had them. The Division of Legislative Audit completed an audit on the 1986-87 retirement incentive program, which shows, according to their figures, a saving of $14.5 million by state government over a three-year period. The auditor, when he testified before the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, indicated that he felt that was a conservative figure. The $14.5 million savings was conservative. And for instance, if a position other than the position retired was held vacant in order to achieve the savings, the cost savings was not directly associated with the retired position. The cost savings not directly associated with the retired position was not included in the audit report. Another example of why that may be a conservative figure is that the audit figures only represent salaries for retired positions and do not include the savings and benefits that are associated with those positions. That's the $14.5 million that the auditors came up with. It reflects only salaries and does not reflect the benefit savings. Including benefits, we roughly estimate the savings over a three-year period to be $25 million. If you'd add the benefits to that, if you want to project it out to a five-year period, we would project it to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 million savings for state employees alone. Also in the packet that's been provided to the committee is a report from the Division of Retirement and Benefits of the savings accruing to school districts and municipalities as a result of their participation in the 86-87 Retirement Incentive Program. The impact on school districts as a result of the incentive was a sizable savings, as you can see from that report. It amounted to at least, of the districts that have reported in, it amounted to about $31 million, slightly more than $31 million in savings. Municipalities, in addition to that, saved almost $5 million over a five-year period, and that's on the same report. Some communities, if just very briefly list them, some communities did show substantial savings. For example, the Anchorage School District reported a five-year savings of $13,474,000. North Slope Schools, according to the information we have, a five-year saving figure of $1,315,000. Fairbanks Schools, $2.5 million, Juneau, $1.2 million, Valdez, $1.6 million, City of Ketchikan 1.2 and the City of Valdez 1.1. So it does appear from the data we have, both for state employees, done by the legislative auditors in a very objective report, and also from the information reported to retirement benefit from school districts and municipalities, that the program was very successful and that the savings achieved over a five-year period is great, in the neighborhood of well over $50 to $60 million. There is another branch of government that we do not yet have a report on, that being the university system. They are putting together their figures, preliminary indications from everyone we have been in contact with at the university system is that they also realize the savings, of course, and savings in personal services cost, and we would expect those figures would, their report would reflect that when it is available. I know I've heard some concern expressed about some possible abuses which might have occurred in the last retirement incentive program, and I think we should take steps to be sure that if there were abuses then, that they do not continue. One of the areas that has been mentioned to me is the fact that perhaps there were some commissioners, and I know for a fact there were a couple of commissioners who retired under the last retirement incentive program, and I don't believe that's what the program is intended to address, those positions. I do not believe those folks should have been eligible for retirement under the RIF program. For that reason, we have drafted in Senate Bill 73, Section 4B, I don't know the exact page number, the following language. The plan may not permit an employee who is a commissioner or a deputy commissioner of a state department to participate. So we want to make it clear to the administration who finally administers this program that those people are not eligible to participate. Also in your packet is a copy of information on how many exempt positions participate in the RIF. And that's provided for your information. I don't know the figure, I think it's 38 what the figures we had. Out of the total 2,000 some, 38 were exempt positions. There's also, in addition to the solid dollar figures that we've come up with as a cost savings, there's also an indirect benefit, I believe, of the retirement incentive program. And that indirect benefit is the compensation dollars which are retained in the economy, which would otherwise have been lost if employees were laid off. Many employees, of course, who would be laid off because of declining revenues would move out of the state to find work. Information we have that around 70% of the retirees in both the public employees and teacher retirement system choose to remain in Alaska after retirement. So a large percentage of those folks who would retire remain in the state, their dollars continue to work in the state and continue to contribute to the economy. Thus, if we retain the salaries of the lower level employees who are not laid off as a result of the RIF program, and we retain 70% of the retirement compensation, which is paid out as a result of the retirement incentive program, we have done a rough estimate that for state employees alone, the net cash gain to our economy would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million. I think it's important to understand how this works. In a time of declining revenues, if there are going to be layoffs, it is not going to be the lower, the higher level people, the higher paid people who are probably laid off. They've probably got the seniority, they've been around, they're going to be staying on. It's the new people in state employment, the lower level folks who will probably get laid off. And if the retirement incentive program can help reduce that hardship on those people, I think it's very worthwhile. And I think it did do that in the last go-around. So when we have shrinking government dollars, I think it's important to keep as much money in the economy as we can, and you're really keeping two checks in the economy, the retirement check, as well as a person who is continuing to work. I've also included in your packet for your information many letters of support for reestablishment of the retirement incentive program. There have been many individual letters from people around the state, teachers, public employees, others. In addition, we have from organizations support from NEA of Alaska, the Alaska Council of School Administrators, the Matanuska Susitna Borough, the North Slope Borough School District, the Alaska Gateway Schools, Mountain View Elementary School, Sterling Elementary School, the Interior Public Employees Coalition, Cities of Seward, Houston, Kotzebue, and I'm sure there are others out there who do support it but who have not yet written in at this time. Of course, we must also keep in mind as I list this, these people who support, if there are municipalities who are thinking to themselves, we don't want to participate for a number of reasons, they don't have to participate even to put the program in. It's entirely optional to them. There has been a great deal of interest expressed by school districts, teachers, and other public employees in beginning the window periods earlier than what we have them in the legislation. And you probably have received letters, as I have, asking that the window periods be moved to 1989 and extending them for a longer period of time. Many individuals have asked that the window periods be longer and span more than one fiscal year in order to spread the fiscal and workload impact of retirement over a wider period. And I think that we do need to look at those window periods and would encourage the committee to do so. As I said, the window period in the bill as submitted all occur in 1990 for a 3-month period of time. I think those windows can be changed, and that should be evaluated by the committee. I have submitted a proposal to you, Mr. Chairman, that would change it to open the windows as early as July 1 of '89 and close them on June 30th, 1990 for teachers and university employees, and for state municipal employees, open them October 1st and close them September 30th, 1990. In the first case, for teachers and university employees, they would be required to retire on or before August 1st of 1990, and for state municipal on or before November 1st of 1990. I think that's a point that needs to be looked at, and I'd be pleased to work with the committee to try to arrive at a window period that's acceptable to the committee and also will address the major concerns. I have, I think, maybe circulated to you a blank CS that would do that. However, again, I understand the committee would probably like to discuss that and look at it. Also, there is another minor change in the legislation that I would encourage you to look at. The change would be on top of page 8, paragraph G, the references to municipal service would all be changed to refer to service to a political subdivision or political organization prior to that entity's entry into the retirement system. This amendment was brought to us by a member of the Senate. Senator Halford, as I recall, is the one who requested that we look at this change. It would allow employees of political organizations such as ASHA to claim retirement with ASHA for the purposes of qualifying for the retirement incentive. Chairman, I believe strongly that the bill was successful when we enacted it last time. I know there were a number of questions among legislators and among the public as to how successful it was. I think the legislative audit that was done on a very objective approach does show that there was success in reducing the cost for state employees, for the state as far as state employees go, that municipalities as well as school districts receive substantial cost benefit, and also then there's the indirect cost of keeping more money working in the economy if you reduce the number of layoffs of folks that is going to occur. I think it's worthwhile doing again as we're again approaching a time of declining revenues and talk about shrinking budgets. Information I have available, I'm not sure it's in your packet, indicates that again there may be in a neighborhood of 7,000 people who would be eligible, and based on the same percentage that really did participate last time, we could be looking at another 2,000 participants in the retirement center program. I'd be happy to answer questions. I know there are other folks here who have a lot of technical expertise and thoughts on it who would be happy to contribute also. Thank you.
Senator Duncan, thank you very much. I was, I guess, skeptical of the program when it was first introduced, just as a philosophical matter. But in looking through the audit and in talking to you and your staff, it seems that there are some very real savings. And I think that we may have some questions and want to clarify what the assumptions were when we talked to the auditor and maybe the Department of Administration. I had one kind of overriding, maybe philosophical question to you on the program, and that's when does a program become a special incentive versus just reducing the requirements for retirement, like a 17-year retirement program or a 27-year retirement program or a age 57 retirement program, because now we will, in essence, have a back-to-back program. And I guess in my mind, I'm still debating, is something that makes economic sense 2 years ago and may make economic sense now, does it always make economic sense? And are we really just reducing our retirement requirements?
Well, I think that's a good question. And I think the answer to that is no, it may not always make economic sense. And that's why, and if you put it permanent statute, then of course that would be a permanent change in the retirement system, the way the retirement system would work. It may not always make economic sense. I think it makes economic sense now because it did when we had declining revenues before. When we looked at the number of people who are eligible again, it's a high number of people. Seems to me it makes economic sense. The reason why we're proposing certain windows and why we proposed short windows initially in the bill was so that people had to make that decision pretty quickly as to whether or not they were going to retire. They had to make that decision. They had to move on. The longer the windows are, the more it becomes just an extended benefit, and I think people procrastinate will put off their decision until the last minute. I'm not advocating, I don't know if it will ever make economic sense again. I mean, this may be the second time it does, and there may never be a third time. I think we need to evaluate that on a year-by-year basis. Looking at what other states have done, for example, California, as I recall, they have had 2 or 3 window periods. They've had a retirement incentive program. I think they opened it 3 times or 2 or 3 times. So other states have followed the same format of opening the windows, closing them, waiting a while, reopening them, closing them down, and moving on. And as I said, it may not be a program which in the next 10 years will make economic sense again. But based on what happened in the past, where we're at today with declining revenues and the number of people who would be eligible, it does make economic sense.
One other question. Was there any attempt, and the auditor wasn't asked to address this question, but we don't have a base case. You know, we don't know how many people would retire anyway. And the question arises, does the incentive need to be 3 years? Either 3 years on top of your retirement years or 3 years minus your retirement age requirements. Does 1 year get you the same end with fewer costs? Does 2 years? What was the rationale for 3 years?
Well, I would guess that a one-year incentive or a two-year incentive would get you less cost if you want to look at the cost. I mean, it would mean that, one, the employee would have to pay in less and the employer would have to. But I think you would also find out you would be eliminating a whole bunch of people who would then be eligible for the retirement incentive. If you went to a one-year incentive, I don't know how much that number would decrease by, but instead of, and I'm pointing this number off the top of my head, it's in the packet somewhere, instead of being 7,000 who are eligible, it may be a lot less than that. I don't know what the number would be. If you went to 2 years, it would be more than 1 year, but less than 3 years. So the reason why we went to 3 years is that's where we were before. It seemed to work. It seemed to be a logical incentive. And people responded to it. It worked. It saved money. It reduced costs. We based that 3 years the first time around on what other states have done, on what other programs have done. As I recall, the state of California had a 3-year window. It seemed to work for them. A 3-year incentive seemed to work for them. We did the same thing. I think, you know, that's another point that's debatable. If you shorten incentive, you're going to reduce the number of people who will participate, and therefore, I would guess, perhaps reduce your overall cost savings. But again, that's nothing I have firm figures on. Maybe retirement benefits could give you a better idea as to, if you started reducing that, how many people would drop off.
Senator Hill.
Jim, what are the exact differences between the bill introduced this year and the program that was enacted into law before?
I think the basic differences between the bill I introduced this year and the one that was enacted before is a provision that commissioners, deputy commissioners, cannot participate. There is one other difference. The other difference is before, the reason why you've got this massive piece of legislation before you is because before the whole thing was temporary statute and it all went away. We're now putting retirement incentive into, and I may have misspoke myself a little bit earlier in the testimony, we're now putting retirement incentive into permanent statute, but the windows are not there. So it's the program is always there, but nobody can participate until the legislature comes back 3 or 4 years from now and says, okay, there's a window period where you can make the option of participating. So there's two differences. One,
Are they all exempt employees or just the commissioners and deputy commissioners?
Just commissioners and deputy commissioners at this time.
Well, there was a lot of 38 exempt employees took advantage of this, right?
38 out of 2,000. And I can answer that question. Let me tell you, Senator Kelly, if I can, Mr. Chairman, we looked at that because, in fact, that's one of the areas we looked at of trying to limit that as much as possible because there may be some other people retiring who you think should not. The problem is there are exempt employees who are really not political appointees. There are exempt employees, for example, I think in the Division of Personnel, perhaps, or Division of Labor Relations, or some of these other areas, who really aren't political appointees, as we think of a commissioner or deputy commissioner. They don't change with administrations. They're long-term career public employees, but they're in exempt positions because of the nature of their job. And that's why that type of definition causes some problems. There may be a better definition if the committee can come up with one. There may be a better way to be sure that there's not people who are coming in just for one administration participating in the program. The problem, as I said, we had is that at least my there are career state employees who are in exempt positions because of the nature of their job.
What about directors?
We did not. We put commissioners, deputy commissioners. That's something I think the committee may want to discuss and debate. I don't know how many directors last time participated in the program. I don't have that information. Maybe retirement benefits has it all. It's in this list somewhere. I don't see the figure.
It's
there.
Chart 2, about 10 pages back of the special plan. The 16 directors.
Wow.
16 directors.
Advantage of the program, didn't it? It might have been a change of administration, too, huh? One more thing. Once again, the exact differences in the proposed bill from the old one.
Two differences.
And
I don't know language for language, comma for comma, but two differences. One is we did not put any guidelines on who or who could not retire in the former program. And as a result, and I think incorrectly, I know two commissioners retired under it, and there may be some deputy commissioners. It was not intended to do that. We have specified in this legislation, commissioners, deputy commissioners are not eligible for retirement center programs. That's the one change. The other change is just the way it's written into permanent statute instead of temporary. If you would look in the statutes now, you would not find a retirement center program, despite the fact we passed it in 1986. It was temporary law, and it went away after the program was through. We've now written it so if we ever want to do this again, you don't have to have this whole bill before you. All you would have then is the question of window periods, right? Do we want to open a window period? I've got another change. I'm glad you asked the question again. except I don't understand the note.
What's the note?
Why don't you explain? Can I ask Roxanne to explain?
Okay.
We allowed BIA people that work for the BIA as teachers in like North Slope before the state took over or got involved in school districts to use our BIA service, and that was a bill that went through last year. So that's included in here.
Okay. The original bill did not allow BIA teachers to use that service. Last year we passed separate legislation to allow that. And that is in this bill, so BIA teachers would be treated like, people with BIA service would be treated like other, all other teachers.
So,
you want to ask again?
Senator, Mr. Chairman, schools took advantage of this, but very few municipalities did. Do you know the reason why?
I don't know the reason why. You know, again, it was an optional program for municipalities. I can speculate on the reason why, and probably because many school districts have had a much greater number of long-term, I want to use this word very carefully, long-term employees who were at the higher end of the salary schedule, and therefore they could show a much greater savings than municipalities could. I think it varies from municipality to municipality, depending on where their people are at. For example, the Centerville of Juneau, as I recall, did use it, and they saved... $1.2 million over the period of time. And a couple other municipalities did. Some municipalities probably evaluated the program, looked at it, and decided there was no savings there for them, or they didn't have anyone they wanted to to retire. So I think you'd have to ask each individual municipality why they did not participate. We're not, of course, mandating anybody to participate.
One more question, Mr. Chairman. Would the sponsor of the legislation mind some such provision to make sure that people took advantage of the program? I mean, if you have an open end, some people will stay on board, whether they work for a municipality, a school district, or state employee, or the university. If they know it's an open end piece of legislation, but if you put a cutoff date, then perhaps they'd take advantage of the program.
That's, Mr. Chairman, I think that's in the legislation itself. And that's why you have the window periods, because they can only participate during that window period. And in the original bill submitted to you, we had a window period of 3 months. For example, the state employees, just to take them, would have to make the application, according to the legislation that's before you, would have to make application during January, February, March of 1990. They'd have to decide during those 3 months if they were going to retire, and they'd have to retire on before May 1st, 1990. So they couldn't put off the decision. Then for the next 3 month period, the teachers would make a decision, and the next 3 months, university and then municipalities. And the reason we spread it out over the 1 year was, I'm going to say this, and then somebody's going to say it's not the reason, but the reason in my mind was, we didn't want to put all the workload and retirement benefits all at once, right? If you had everybody retiring in the first 3 months of the year, I don't think you could process the paperwork, you could keep up with the program. So we spread it out to help relieve the workload on retirement benefits. So to answer your question, I think there is a sunset. Now, I said there's a question about the windows, and you could extend those to a longer period of time, or you could change the dates, and I really have no strong feelings one way or the other on that. The longer the window becomes, however, the longer people put off the decision. So, you don't want a 2 or 3 year window period, or they'll never decide to retire. That's why you do need the windows. And it is a sunset, if I'm answering your question.
Yes, you are answering. My question is just to be concerned with just one window period, 1 3 months versus a time frame of 1 year in there. So that's what we'll be looking at. I'd like us to look at one window for 3 months. And I know your reasons. It's because the workload, perhaps, on the retirement and benefits.
I understand what you're saying, and there may also be other reasons difficult to match up those windows. For example, teacher contracts expire at a different time, perhaps, than university contracts do, or all those things, so it would have to be worked pretty carefully, but I'm, and retirement benefits can speak to the workload end of it. If they can handle it all within a 3 or 4 month period, you know, I don't necessarily have a problem if we can work it out so that it's meets contract requirements.
One more, I just thought. Do you know if the unions and the negotiators are taking this extra benefit into their considerations when they negotiate?
Mr. Chairman, no, I would guess they're not. I mean, I don't know. I'm not at the collective bargaining table, but it's not an extra benefit as such. And that kind of goes back to what Representative Porchot was asking. We're not putting this in as a reduction in the retirement system. It's not an extra benefit as such. The employees are paying their share. They're paying their if they're taking a 3-year incentive, and I don't know what the 6-point-some% right now employees pay for in PRS. They've got to pay that 6-point-whatever% times their salary for 3 years in order to participate. So it's really not, they're putting some money up front in order to participate. Surely they're retiring 3 years earlier, but the reason why we're doing that is because, as the purpose of the bill states, in a period of declining revenues, when things are getting a little bit tighter, it's an effort to reduce the hardship of layoffs and to bring about a net reduction in personal services. So I would guess the answer to your question is no.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to the sponsor. Senator, did you get the letter that I was thought I passed off to your office on the municipality of Anchorage and their comments about the bill? Is it in the packet?
It should be in the packet.
Okay, I couldn't find it. Municipality of Anchorage sent a letter explaining why they didn't use the program. It didn't pencil out for them. And they explain it. They didn't necessarily dislike the program, it just didn't work in that particular time frame for them, and so they didn't use it. It was a 3 or 4 page letter, and it was pretty detailed, and I was hoping that everybody would see it. Oh, okay. Second question is, Jim, on this page?
Yes.
What, I might have missed it, and I apologize for being late, and you might have already explained it, but what's the difference between these windows? Because this is the way it worked last time, isn't it, with the quarters, and the windows split up across a year where everybody had one quarter to make their decision?
The difference between the windows in the bill is before you, it's one quarter apiece, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've had so many letters and suggestions on changing the window, I came up with a proposed change that I wanted the committee to consider, but I'm not advocating it necessarily, where we would expand it over the 2 fiscal years, leave a 1-year window for 2 groups at a time. It would run from July 1st of 89 to June 30th of 90. But that's not before you as it's an amendment that I would...
Using your logic, everybody is going to wait until the last month or 2 months to do this. Using the logic as to why you had the windows of 3 months duration at a quarter each for the whole year versus giving them a whole year, they're going to wait until that last quarter to make that decision, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. Maybe retirement benefits.
Why not?
Yeah.
Senator Fix, if I might add just a comment. We did hear, though, from some people who said, why do it? Why wait till 1990? I'm ready to retire now. I would be willing to retire before the new school year, in fact, in this coming school year, if I were given an incentive. But if you move the windows to 90, I'll wait another school year. So there's another argument there.
Oh, okay. All right, I see.
To try to move it up a year.
But okay, 6 months. Okay.
I don't think there's a... that we know at this time whether there's a right or a wrong to it or how much the relative cost would be.
I was just wondering what this page was.
Other questions of bill sponsor? Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
I would appreciate, I don't have anybody signed up from the Department of Administration, but we would welcome testimony of Ms. Smith or Mr. Stallnacker.
I'm Sally Smith, the Director of Retirement and Benefits with the Department of Administration, and if we could find another chair, I would appreciate having Bob Stallnacker join me. I'm sure you will have technical questions. While he's coming forward, I'll go ahead and give a couple of opening remarks. First of all, I certainly want to thank the sponsor, Senator Duncan, and his staff for working so closely and so well with Mr. Stallnacker and my staff. I think it has been a beneficial relationship with what's a difficult subject for us. We had more retirements under the RIP in 1 month than we had in the previous year. So it was an incredible impact on the staff at Retirement and Benefits, and we have appreciated their cooperation in trying to understand what that meant to us and certainly what it means to the people who are trying to retire in delays. Problems have come from it. As you increase the numbers, you have a reduction in efficiency, and so I think that there have been some problems just due to the volume of the work. I would like to emphasize the difficulty that the state is facing with regard to the management of programs in declining revenues. As a manager for several different agencies within state government, one of which was involved with the retirement incentive program, we lose people without regard to how the program can best be managed. And it skews the talents that are available to the agency. One of the difficulties that I see with legislation as a manager is being able to control a reduction in staff if that is the direction we are to go. The administration is, of course, favoring a reduction in programs, a reduction or elimination in programs. And certainly, if we find that this program can be beneficial to cushion that reduction, it's something that we favor. But to have this as a focal point to set up the reduction, it makes our job more difficult as managers. So I guess I'm talking in terms of it as a management tool. If the purpose of it is to help with the layoffs, it may in fact create more difficulties in program management that cause another problem. We would prefer to see that the budget direction be set before we make a determination as to whether this program is beneficial in cushioning the blows of the personal services reductions. I think another question that the committee may wish to consider is this bill as a retirement program, or if in fact it's a recareering program. As time goes on from the retirements that were achieved under the retirement incentive program, there are more and more people wishing to come back in to employment. There's not another market to absorb them easily. And I think that you may be asked down the road to look at ways to either reduce the penalty or eliminate the penalty to return to public service as public service stabilizes. The primary purposes of retirement and benefit programs are stated in statute to attract and retain qualified personnel. I believe that there is a consideration here as to whether this falls within the service or within the purview of the purposes of retirement programs to attract and retain qualified personnel. We're concerned about the expanding windows. I believe the question was raised, and you, Mr. Chair, pointed out that you might wait until the second year. We certainly know that we're facing, if this bill passes, an increased impact on the agency, and perhaps the agency is better prepared to take that impact this time around, knowing what we're getting into. I might suggest that by expanding, people, the majority of people did wait until toward the end to declare their purpose. If it's for a full year, we see recalculating and recalculating. There's a curiosity, you know, what's going to be the best set of circumstances? If I retire this year, what's the advantage to me versus if I retire next year, what's the advantage to me? So we will end up doing their portfolios a couple of times down the road while they make a decision whether it's better to stay on or to leave. So the longer windows create more of an impact for the agency, and I think we would prefer shorter windows on a rotating schedule. Those are essentially our concerns. The brain drain is...
We're going to go in for about 5 minutes. Come back. We're going to deal with the HJR tomorrow. When you hear the bell, we'll be in about 5 minutes. You can come back.
I have one final point, if that's all right. Is that...
No,
okay.
We're
also concerned about the brain drain, and I think that this is kind of where I started with my comments as well. When we aren't able to manage the programs by where the layoffs will be, but the layoffs are given to us essentially, there is an experience problem. There is a depth of knowledge problem, and then it's a retraining situation for the agencies. We certainly know there's a lot of public interest in this. We know it's a difficult decision. We are concerned about keeping the professional flow of government orderly so that we can make very good management decisions, and are hopeful that this will be considered in the progression of your budget discussions.
Sally, let me ask a couple questions to clarify a couple things that you said, which I guess I don't follow. The first deals with from a managerial standpoint, you want to, you know, prohibit or you want to control situations that might develop where you have, you know, say a whole bunch of people from one shop being retired and leaving kind of a work management problem in the lurch. My reading of the bill, though, is that the administration has the responsibility or the druthers as to what organizational units it cares to designate. That given a good managed designation, as opposed to what I perceived the system last time was virtually everybody in all shops were eligible, that you could avoid that if you have very specific organizational units that you fear that would leave it, you know, leave the work accomplishments very disrupted, that conceivably would not designate that organizational unit. Now, there may be problems that arise from that, equity problems, but that, in my mind, is not the purpose of the legislation. We're not dealing with all the equity problems. The second thing that you raise that I don't hear is cost savings, and it seems like that is going very conceivably the next year or two is going to be a very real pressing concern of managers within the state organizations and bureaucracy, and I don't know how you trade off brain drain expertise types of concerns versus cost savings, but it seems like that there is another, there's a flip side of that, that along with brain drain also comes organizational and personnel flexibility, that you've got, it's not all net loss, that there are new people conceivably coming in, so that it doesn't leave a position zero. The savings come from filling a position at a lower level, so that you do have new people coming in conceivably. I mean, theoretically, that's the point of the program. So, am I misreading that, or do you not see it working like that?
I suppose, Mr. Chair, I see it from several different perspectives from my own experience as a manager. I think that there are equity problems that are very real, and I think that they're worthy of your concern. If we deny to someone, and the question has come up before through the Ombudsman's office, it didn't get pushed very hard. If someone is denied who is otherwise eligible the ability to resign or to retire under this program, I'm not sure where our liabilities really are. And I think that there very seriously could be some. As an administrator, I was very uncomfortable with the power that I was given in the last one because I didn't feel I had enough safeguards behind me. I could arbitrarily choose who could stay and who could go. Therefore, the pressure was on me to make that designated organizational unit available to everyone who was in my agency that I could conceivably show a cost savings. And that's exactly what I tried to do.
Thanks. The way we heard it in the last go around, and what I really endorsed was that the administration would have the opportunity to reorganize as such with this. I mean, you could make decisions within that organizational unit as to who went and who didn't go, and all you're doing is saying it's a 3-year delay on somebody. I mean, that's your job. You have the responsibility to say yes or no on this thing. I mean, it's not, I mean, the way you sound like it, you didn't have the courage to say yes or no. I mean, that was the point. You had the opportunity and the responsibility to say who goes and who doesn't go as to what makes sense in good government within that particular unit. And I think the bill was drafted to give the managers that responsibility. I mean, you should be doing that every day anyway.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Senator Fakes, we try to do that. And I do think I'm a good manager. It worked well for me last time, but it was more of a serendipity that it worked well. I'm not saying this won't work well, but I am saying that the best way to manage is to reorganize on the basis of your programs and to lay off the people that are not as beneficial to your programs. In this way, we're reorganizing based on holes that are set from other than a sound managerial practice, and we're trying to safeguard ourselves as well. It's kind of a hard thing to articulate because the people that you can do right by, shall we say, you try to give the advantage to. And some administrators, by and large, are going to try to remove the dead wood, keep the good ones. That's not necessarily fair to the good ones that have, in my viewpoint, maybe even more right to go. You get a double-edged sword. You want to keep your best. On the other hand, that's not fair to them either.
The bill, like as you said, isn't meant to be fair. It's to give the managers a tool to be the most effective. And someone, had, I mean, this is a special thing. This is not a right. This is a special given. And so you have to make that decision. You basically, as the manager, are in the hot seat on this one, and you have to call the shots as what's best for your agency and the people of Alaska. What's going to produce the best service? And this isn't somebody's right that we have to be fair to. This is a special tool that's given to the managers of state government. I think the Finance Committee would love to see which programs the governor would suggest eliminating, if you want to go it that way. I mean, the governor's done nothing but say we need more. At least this is giving you a tool that can reduce, based on your management skills, those agencies.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that this does not give us the tool to eliminate programs. It does, I mean, we can still eliminate programs, I assume, but some of them are statutorily required. As a manager, I would far prefer to be told which programs I'm not going to do and eliminate staff on that basis, rather than eliminate staff on the basis of years of service.
I did hear the bell. If people could, we're going to break for about 5 minutes, I think, and then we'll come back, and I have Senator Adams and Senator Ewing have some questions, and
sure.
Ms. Smith, you could just continue. You don't have to still stand there, but we're recessed for about 5 minutes.
While we get back, let's see, Senator Adams, did you, first, let me, were you finished, Senator Fakes, with your questions?
Yes,
for
thank you.
Senator
sure.
Adams?
The only question in 1986, budget reduced in the RIP program then was designated to offset the budgets. And as you know, we look at this year's governor's budget, and it does not include any significant budget cuts. And if we're looking at no budget cuts, is there really a necessary for this bill?
Mr. Chair and Senator Adams, I'm not sure that I'm the person equipped to answer that question. I think it's an appropriate question for OMB.
That's one of the reasons that we need to get rid of OMB is we've got too many duplications of services, and I can't get a straight answer here. Thank you.
I'll Senator, second that motion.
Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the other members have shown their concern about, you know, two things I think that came up most frequently, and that was, number one, the organizational situation. In other words, how can I better organize my department and make it more efficient? And, you know, also the fact of what direction you're going to take as far as, you know, whether this is going to be an effective or not effective program. And I'm kind of getting a mixed signal from both of you on if this is really going to be beneficiary to the purpose of making things more efficient. I don't know, what's the answer to that? Is this really going to help you make your department more efficient?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ewing, I think that is a difficult question to answer because each agency is going to have a different set of circumstances. I can speak from my personal experience. I reorganized my division and reduced it by 36%. This program was beneficial to me in that reduction under those circumstances. I don't believe that holds true for all agencies because then I believe the reorganization takes place around those particular layoffs and creates a situation where you're not managing as much for the programs. We also, I think it's a great tool for across-the-board layoffs. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. It cushions the blow to the economy. But I do believe, and I believe the governor has stated this clearly, we have been through a round of across-the-board layoffs. And many of us have programs that are stretched to the max to try to provide the statutory responsibilities with the people on board. And therein, I think, is where you have a difficulty of knowing where this program will work and where it won't. I think you'll hear from the school districts, and I believe the school districts and the political subdivisions have a different set of circumstances than I will in my division, and my division will have a different set of circumstances than another agency. So
secondly, this bill has nothing to do with across-the-board layoffs. It has nothing to do with across-the-board layoffs. This does not mandate layoffs. This has nothing to do with that. What this bill says is, in a period of declining revenues, hardship of those layoffs than just put people out of work. And the way we're doing that is to put together a retirement program where people can, higher range people can retire, remain in the state, they will have a retirement check that they can support themselves on and keep that money in the economy, and it will reduce the hardship of across-the-board layoffs, because the lower number of people who might be laid off, if there was layoffs, big percentage of them can stay and work. So it has, it does not, it's not an across-the-board layoff tool. Ideally, if this bill passed, we could reduce government, reduce the number of employees substantially without having a large number of layoffs.
Well, can I appreciate that point. I guess I'm just trying to think, going back to the purpose of the bill, and the purpose of the bill, okay, we're gonna, these people are gonna lay off, they're gonna take advantage of the system, that someone that come along and then refill that position at a lower level, or is the position just eliminated?
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer that question. There's several things that can happen. If an individual participates in this program, keep in mind what I said earlier, he is not an individual who's probably going to be laid off no matter what you do to government because of the seniority and the time he's been around. But if he agrees, or if he is participating in the retirement incentive program, several things can happen. One is the position may be held completely vacant and eliminated. If you look at the audit report that was done by Mr. Walker, you'll find there were a number of those cases where there was just no refilling. The other thing that may happen is position may be refilled at a lower range or even at the same range at a lower step, or it may be reclassified down or whatever. So there's several things that can happen. The underlying premise here is that when this all happens, the unit is put together should show a reduction in personal services costs, should show a savings. The bottom line is, despite the fact it really hasn't been spoken to by the retirement benefits, the bottom line, which is real difficult to argue with, is this program save money. State level, municipal level, school district level, it saved money and reduced the hardship of layoffs.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that, and I think that has an impact. You know, it reduces the layoff situation as long as I'm sure that the final purpose is that it's having some effect as far as, you know,
Senator Adams, and then Senator Fink.
Just what's the administration position as far as the window periods? There's four window periods on a year time versus a 3-month period. What's your position on that, please?
I believe we prefer the shorter window periods, Mr. Chair, Senator Adams. People do delay to make the decision. It makes the decision come, and the way the window periods are set up, it spreads out the workload for the agency, and I believe that the senator has been careful to assure that they coordinate with the appropriate times in the cycle of the different agencies involved, like school districts.
If I could follow that up, and not to hog your question here, would you prefer the earlier, shorter time window or the later, shorter time window?
I'd like to defer to Bob.
Through the chair, I'm Bob Stolnick, the Deputy Director of the Division of Retirement Benefits. I think our experience has been, it really, I don't think, would matter to us as to whether it's an earlier or later. Certainly, being expected to gear up in 3 months' time to have a window period start in July, as opposed to having some time to be able to hire some people to handle the impact, train them, and so forth, would be more, would be better for us. So I guess in that respect, the latter window periods would be better for us. Certainly spreading it out over a year is better for us, because as we found in the prior example, even over a 24-month period at the last RIF, the average number of retirements more than doubled on a monthly average. The correspondence tripled. The impact was just tremendous. Now, some of that was because it was such a long window period that a lot of people were calling every month to find out what's my benefit now and so forth. So the impact is there, certainly. Having it spread over a year would allow us at least a chance of keeping up with it.
Just to clarify, having what spread out? The different categories of people, state, municipal, teachers, spread out over a year?
Yes,
but each window being a quarter of a year?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Adams, I apologize.
Basically, to pay for this program, you estimate a revenue of $330,000?
that would be assessed when the contracts were devised with the employer, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Senator Duncan, if I may. Senator, that when the first time the bill came through a couple of years ago, you had a sheet, I kind of remember, that gave us an analysis of how many people per department could be potentially eligible for this, and it helped develop a potential cost savings, I think, that was real effective. Have you had a chance to do that again?
Mr. Chairman, there is a chart I have available. It may not be in your packet. It does not do it by department, but we do it by entity.
Okay.
So for example, for state, PERS has estimated that the state PERS has estimated that 2,292 people are potential retirees. TRS, 2,259. Non-state PERS 2420. So the other community have 6,971 people potential eligible. And then if you just use the same percentage of potential eligible and actual retirees, the last time you come up with over 2,000 estimated actual retirees. We may be able to get that for the department, but we haven't asked for that.
It was just effective for showing those people the potential cost. I happen to be supportive of this. I think it worked last time. I think you were very agreeable in putting it through in a short time period and working through all those problems, and I think they all worked out very, very well. So it's the third sheet, those numbers that you read, the third sheet in our packet, Senator. So we do have those. It did sound familiar to me. It might help people to do it by department. I think you did it last time, and to show the potential savings that are out there that you have last time. And I think you hit it pretty close. You estimated then, I believe you had a column, estimated how many folks would be able to do this. And I thought that was an impressive handout because it was very graphic, and that might help satisfy some of the people on the committee.
We can try.
If I might, Mr. Stalnaker, the audit, of course, that we have is done by our legislative audit people. Has the department or your shop done an analysis of the former, the previous RIP program?
Would you like me to?
Yeah, if you'd like to.
Mr. Chair, OMB was going to undertake that, and I'm not sure if you have seen the letter that we received saying that they were going to wait until they got legislative budget and audits report. One of the things that Jetta Whitaker said in her letter was how difficult this would be to track. I believe that legislative budget and audit did a good job in choosing a formula to follow, but I also believe that there are many other avenues that have not been explored in the time frame involved.
It struck, I'll give Senator Duncan a chance to respond too, it just struck me as odd that the administration, now it's been, you know, a year or more since the conclusion of the program, that the administration hasn't done an analysis of a fairly major program and one that, as we see here, may be continued. And it's not that we don't trust our own auditors, but it would be, it seems like the department should have had more of a better feel, or especially a quantifiable feel, for the existing program to guide, you know, our actions as well as your own future actions. Senator Duffy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's a good question. And there's a report that was done by the Division of Retirement Benefits on January 15, 1988, on the Retirement Incentive Program, May 1986, December 1987. And about halfway through it, state agency projected savings. This was done by Retirement Benefits. They come up with a total of $19,734,000. That was done in January of 1988. Quite honestly, their figure is higher than our auditor's figure. And I don't know how they got this figure, but this projection. And I have been using that as a way to sell the program, saying we'd save 19.7. Our auditors did it very objectively, conservatively, came out with 14.5 without including benefits. And I think by the time you put the benefit figure on top of the actual savings, both figures are very close to being the same. So Retirement Benefits did do some type of look. I don't know how much in detail, but it's in this report that's available that members like to have.
Mr. Chair, that report is really based on the designated organizational units that the managers sent to OMB. The figures are taken from the units set up that had to be approved, showing that they projected a savings before the DOU was accepted and sent over to us to go ahead and process the retirees. The difficulty is that was the premise. I mean, that was, we're going to retire this person, we're going to leave it vacant, or we're not. It does not follow up what actually happened with those positions, which is what Jetta Whitaker's letter was all about. So, no, we have not followed up. I regret to say that I can't give you bona fide statistics. I do not have them.
Other questions of the administration?
No. Thank you very much. We do have a couple of people to testify, and I also would like to field some of our auditors also. Are you prepared to, we may have some technical questions of our own audit. Mr. Ray, Senator Ray, did you care to testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Ray, and I represent the Alaska State Employees Association. We support Senate Bill 73. In a time when these state funds are tight and our newer employees face the possibility of layoffs, to us, the retirement incentive program makes sense. It is designed to prevent layoffs of short-term employees by providing an incentive to senior employees to retire. ASEA believes the original retirement incentive was successful in that regard, and that it will also be successful again under Senate Bill 73. Nearly 1,100 state employees retired under the 1986-87 retirement incentive program, and the recent legislative audit has been reported before. I think it said that the savings were well in excess of $14 million. Through the state's participation in this program. I think we all are aware of the damage of layoffs to individuals and their families, and our organization, our association, hopes that you feel that, as we do, that the incentive program provides a much more humane way to cut back on the personal service expenditures. So in summary, Mr. Chairman, ASEA supports passage of Senate Bill 73, the Retirement Incentive Program, and would urge that a window period for state employees be available in calendar year 1989 to lessen budgetary impact and problems in 1990.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Questions of Senator Reyes?
Thank you very much.
Bruce Ludwig.
Members of the committee. I'm Bruce Ludwig, business manager for the Alaska Public Employees Association. We'd like to testify in favor of the bill. We think with the times as they are and this body trying to find money to save out of the state government, this seems like a good opportunity without any injury to the employees. The numbers that I've heard in the budget summit, they've been talking between $150 and $200 million this year and $400 million overall. And I think the savings in this bill represents 10% of that this year and overall. And it just seems like a good opportunity to take advantage of it. I think we've touched upon it, or Senator Duncan touched upon it, but I think a real important aspect of this as far as the savings is that when you look at taxes or you look at the budget, the money's gone out of the economy and it has a trickle effect on the rest of the economy. In this program, you're taking money out of a pool of money that's sitting there being invested out of state, and you're bringing that money back into the state and putting it back into the economy. So I mean, you're actually helping the economy when you're doing it. I think it gives managers another tool that they need in reorganizing and in aligning their programs with the budget realities that we're faced with today. I'd like to address one issue that you talked about earlier, dealing with exempt employees. And I know you had some concerns about directors and deputy commissioners. There's a number of exempt employees in the state. The ferry system employees that are working on the vessels are all exempt. Post-secondary education is exempt. And these are career employees. So I think you have to take that into consideration and not just lop off exempt employees, but specifically target the positions that you're looking at. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you very much, sir. Bob Manners.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Manners with NEA Alaska, and of course, we do support this legislation and encourage it to be passed. My testimony is, of course, from the school district perspective, and I want to emphasize or focus on the layoff piece and the reality of what the funding cuts do in the public schools. And if you can have the voluntary attrition through this kind of retirement incentive, the impact is far less severe from the human perspective. I think you also need to think about what the effect is long-term for people who are laid off in terms of additional potential hidden costs for the state in terms of other services that they may need. So if you can accomplish the employee reduction through the layoff or through the retirement center, we feel very strongly. The other piece that I want to emphasize about the school districts is not every school district participated in the program the last time, so there is potential for additional savings beyond what the figures show you. And the eligibility requirements were not all the same, so even in districts that participated, they didn't maximize the potential for savings under the program the last time. The other thing, too, that I think is terribly important is that the savings is not just immediate in terms of a higher salaried employee being replaced by a lower salary. That's a long-term cumulative potential savings for employers as well, and I don't think that that should be, that piece of it should be ignored in terms of the actual impact. From the school district perspective relative to the window discussion earlier, our information from our constituents suggests that there are people who would go on both ends. There are people who are ready to go now if this is available. And I think from a management perspective within the school districts, if the impact of the potential retirements under the incentive program could be spaced over two school years, the continuity and planning and management for the school programs could be perhaps done a little bit more efficiently. So if the window can accommodate both the front end and the latter year effective date of retirement, that I think would help the school districts.
Mr. Manners, thank you. I had exactly that same idea. I'm trying to find my paper again here. But it seems like with the school district, it is somewhat unique from the state employees or municipal employees in that it seems logical that people quit at, give notice like a July 1 prior to the next school year starting, and that's, of course, what benefits school districts. It seems like we run into a problem on the 89, because the school year was September 1. Then, under both scenarios, under the bill as written, of course, the teachers are March through May of 90, which misses this school year entirely, but would be plenty of time for a July 1 cutoff for the 90 school year. But then if we go to the longer window, we move it up to July 1, 89 to June 30 and 90 for the window, but the cutoff would be August 1 of 90 still, so that it would be, it seems like it'd be problematic for someone to opt in the July, August window of 89 and have all the paperwork and have the school district hire somebody. It seems like that's pushing. Is that realistic that you could really take the 89 school year into account?
I think you could take the 89 school year into account if we're reasonably certain that this legislation was going to move through the system expeditiously. The further down the calendar you go, the less potential to effectively utilize the next school year as part of the incentive program. But there are a lot of people out there thinking about it, and once the opportunity is either go or no go, I think a lot of decisions are 60, 70, 80% made based upon the speculation about this legislation.
Let me ask you a technical question. Do people retire between semesters, for example? I mean, is that something that is realistic?
Well, some do. I don't think it's the customary, but certainly they do.
Okay, what happens, Mr. Chairman, frequently, and what you could do here is you could adopt Senator Duncan's top one, but also start with the teachers. I mean, keep this, but put one ahead of here and go from July 1, 89 to September 1, 89 for teachers, and say that teachers must retire then by September 1st of 1989. So they'd have that quarter, that 3 months to make a decision. What principals do is they interview a lot of people. They have in their head that they may have to hire one or two staffers. One or two staff members in whatever discipline. So what the principals would do, I would imagine, is Mr. Manners and his organization would get this information out that this is a potential and let those principals would survey their staff and say, who's thinking of this if this occurs? Then the principals could be looking at interviewing two math teachers, a science teacher, three language arts teachers, and they frequently don't hire them until after the school year starts anyway because of the increase in enrollment or decrease in enrollment. There's always an adjustment that first 2 weeks of school, right? And so that's where these folks could be if it caused a problem. But there are folks available. They do have potential employees in mind. They have interviewed them, and they frequently have to hire new staff after the school year starts because, and a lot of times, teachers get shifted from school to school based on where the population of youngsters are. So it's something that I think the school districts I know in our part of the world, in Anchorage, have lived with, especially when the oil boom hit and folks were moving in so quickly, and the school district had no idea what staff they needed until after the first week of school when people settled in. So they're used to dealing with a last-minute staff adjustment.
Along that line, if it's possible to provide that the window could be earlier, as Senator Peck suggests, to accommodate next year, we would still encourage that there perhaps be an optional retirement date of either this year and or a year down the road, and that the school districts are diverse in terms of their profile of their staff and so on. And while probably all of them are being constrained by a shrinking budget, the impact might be a year away in terms of the need to lay off people, and some folks would opt for one more year and still make the commitment at this point in time.
Is there anybody else that cares to testify before we call up Mr. Walker? Mr. Walker? I think most of us have read the methodology and read through the audit. I had a couple of questions on how you were evaluating savings. And one of the questions is I read this as you assumed on the vacant positions, that the vacant positions would remain open for 3 years. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. That is one of the softer assumptions in here. Basically, the methodology we use, Mr. Chairman, on those particular type of positions is we went in and identified for the positions that we reviewed, we did a PCN matchup, basically, between the position that the employee retired out of, and then we started running those PCNs against the state payroll records. That's why we were able to identify PCNs that had new employees in them and the positions that weren't. Of those PCNs where we didn't have someone presently in the position, we went to the PAX file in OMB, and we were able to identify a certain number of positions that were completely out of the PAX file or not budgeted. Other positions were in the PAX file and were budgeted positions, but during the time frame we looked at between August and December, there was no payroll activity against those PCNs. So yes, this number does make the assumption that those positions that are currently vacant would remain vacant, and that may not be necessarily be the case.
So to the extent that a position that is vacant now was filled at some point later, those costs would be subtracted from the savings.
That's right, Mr. Chairman. And that's because those kind of things are necessarily built into any time you do a projection like that. That's why we overall, whenever we had a decision point to make, we took the most conservative approach to come up with that bottom line number, because usually that's the number that gets used the most in any discussion. So we wanted to make sure that the number we were putting out there as that bottom line number was a conservative number.
Another question on that is that there's, and this is a, you know, probably one that's impossible to get at, is the baseline question on vacant positions or positions where layoffs may have occurred, where a retirement took place in a position scheduled for elimination or scheduled for some, you know, permanent vacancy within the next 2 years. Was there any way that you took that into account?
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, no. Basically, what you see here is what you get. We just did the bare minimums that we felt were necessary to come up with a savings number. I'm sure I could keep
a
staff
savings
visit
number or a cost number or both?
Well, it ended up a savings number.
Okay.
I'm sure I could keep staff busy for quite a long time analyzing the different variations and even on a, you know, a case by case, individual by individual basis, or position by position basis. There's, I'm sure, shining examples and glaring examples within all of it.
Another one of these then is was there any attempt to differentiate between people who were 1 or 2 years away from retirement versus people who were 3 years away from retirement? Obviously, this. On the savings side, I mean, that would alter the costs and savings, right?
It would alter that cost to the extent that it would affect the cost to the state, the employer portion of that cost to the state. The further away, actuarially, I'm certain that, you know, the higher that cost would be.
Another one on the on this limitations. I appreciate this section, by the way. I think that's, you know, good on comparisons like this. Your number two, I didn't know what to read it. I mean, how to make a conclusion. You said some positions were reclassified after the employee was retired. Consequently, the cost savings or the loss comparison may be skewed for these positions. How would they be skewed? Which way?
Well, it up and down, I guess, Mr. Chairman. Basically, what we wanted to make you aware of was if we had a clerk typist 3 at a range 12K retire, it does not necessarily mean that a clerk typist 3 was hired at a range 12A. And there are examples in there where once a position, the employee retired out of a position, that position was reclassified into a totally different type of position, and in some cases even at a higher range in pay than the employee that was retired.
Was that more common or less common?
I don't think it was prevalent, but it did happen. And to the extent that anything was reclassified upwards, of course, is going to have a negative impact on the overall savings.
What are the, if I were asking you, just kind of, I know you've stated some of your, you know, soft, or your concerns, or your softer figures. What is your overall confidence level as far as the figures relative to all of these assumptions that you had to make, or the methodology that you employed?
Mr. Chairman, I think as far as the bottom line, the $14.5 million savings, I feel very comfortable with that, because I think we favored the conservative side the whole way through this, and I'm sure the actual savings, if you went in and did a thorough analysis, would only come out to be a higher number.
You weren't asked, obviously, to make efficiency kinds of investigations on how the program was carried out. Did anything come up in your findings as far as how the program was carried out that affected or the savings or costs that you could guide us in looking at a repeat performance?
We didn't design anything specifically to look for that, Mr. Chairman, but just in the general knowledge we gained from doing this matching, I believe the program overall is a beneficial program. It can show savings to the state, obviously. I think that if the retirement incentive program that this report addressed, if there are any weaknesses, it was in the monitoring of the program. I think we were fortunate that it turned out the way it did, but there could have been, I believe once the analysis was completed on whether or not to allow someone to participate, that the analysis of the program stopped at that point in time. And I think that to the extent possible, that there should be requirements that the executive branch stay on top of the program and do this. There's no magic in what we did here. This is pretty much a strictly a computer match type of operation, and it's not something that's you need any significant expertise to do. It's the information's out there in raw data form, and I think a requirement that number one, the requirement that the agencies justify a savings in and of itself is a safeguard, and the review, as long as the review of that savings is a thorough review of that proposed savings and it's well documented, then I don't think the program can't do anything but save money.
Well, I share those concerns and those sentiments as far as evaluation. I guess I'm a little nervous that we are kind of on the seat of our pants debating whether or not open period should be so long or so far. It seems like some of those should have more quantifiable answers to them, and we should seem like be in a better position to know who is the incentive geared at, what was the net motivating factor as far as costs and savings, and even in your report, I think that we could have gotten to baseline levels comparisons more, given more time and more effort. You know, what are the normal kinds of retirement patterns, who's retiring, and who is how far away from retirement, and you know, what groups, what, you know, do they tend to fall into, average length of service versus, you know, years of age and things like that. And I know, I think those are all doable. Would you agree?
I would say the information is available to do that with.
Senator Fancy.
Yeah, two things, Mr. Chairman. One, if I could ask that you have Sally Smith come back up, I have a question for her. But on the windows, you were thinking that we're fine with the seat of our pants. The last time this bill was before Senate State Affairs, there were hours spent on developing those windows, and there was a lot of testimony on what would work, what didn't work, and we had the benefit of all of that. So I, for one, don't feel that the windows are a roll of the dice kind of situation. I feel real comfortable with how we had so much testimony the previous time that I feel comfortable with the windows, and that's why I was hesitant of changing the windows, because we had gone through all that previous testimony.
Comfortable from a financial standpoint or comfortable from the utility mechanics of the employees?
It has to work, though, for the employees. And I guess for the windows, the way I remember it, Senator Ewing, and you might help on this, is I remember we looked at it, one, is if it's not mechanically feasible for the employees, we may miss somebody who really wants to do this, but because mechanically it doesn't work for them or their family or whatever's happening in their life, they aren't going to take advantage of the program this time around. So I think on the windows, you have to have the Division of Investment's best interest at heart, and you have to have it mechanically work for the employees too, so that the maximum number of folks will feel comfortable with taking advantage of the situation. I think the savings, the overall savings, is a benefit, but I don't think that is what's most important in the windows. Because I think the thing works. See, I believe the process worked last time. On your efforts on, I'm upset though that OMB seemed to drop the ball on following through on how the program worked and having some kind of hard data on that. Maybe we should consider working with the sponsor, putting a section in here that requires a detailed analysis of the program, a report to the legislature from OMB, and put down what kinds of information we want OMB to supply us as to how this program this time is working. I don't want it to cost a lot of money, and I don't want OMB to have to put on four more people. But at the same time, I think it's kind of irresponsible if the legislature doesn't have real hard data to work with in evaluating this program. But I think it worked because Senator Duncan went through huge amounts of work with the state of California and anybody else who did this in trying to develop the mechanism of the way he did. But OMB dropped the ball on being able to give us some good numbers and some good analysis, and there's no suggestions for improvement. I mean, maybe there's something here that if we just changed a few things could even be better in the process and better working, and we have nothing from them.
That was my point, exactly. And you can look at the figures one of two ways. You can look at Senator Duncan's figures and say 2,000 employees or 30 or 40% of all those eligible took part in the last RIP. Mm-hmm. Is that good or bad? Is it a success in that there were so many people in terms of raw numbers take place? Or was it a failure in that we didn't get 70% of the people to participate? And of course, the other extension, logical or otherwise, is if it works with long periods, why have any periods? Why not just continue? I mean, why have any bounds on it if we want to maximize the number of people taking advantage of it? If more is better. And see, I'm not sure that that's true or not.
Mr. Chairman, whatever the bottom line is, what is the purpose of it? And is the purpose that under declining revenues, we are gonna reduce the workforce and we're gonna try to help these people get out of their job and go off to do other things. That's the purpose of it. Maybe it needs to be expanded further from what it is right now to make it even more beneficial for not just that one category of people. Let me continue, and let me ask one question, Mr. Walker, through the chair, and that was the analysis that was used in regard to the vacant position. Did you assume then that in your analysis that when they retired, this number of employees that retired, that the department then left the position vacant, and then that was calculated into your total costing?
Basically, Mr. Chairman, I think in that category of position, there's probably several types of positions in there. Mm-hmm. Some of them may just be seasonal positions, and at the time we decided to match against the payroll, that there just wasn't anybody in that position at that time. Others could be budgeted positions that the program people just decided to leave vacant, could be permanent positions that are out there right now and are vacant. So that's one of those projection things. I don't know what's going to happen to those positions tomorrow. So to the extent something contrary, those positions get filled, as we said, those would be a reduction in the savings. But again, that's not a major part. It's a significant number, but it's not significant enough to still significantly reduce that overall savings.
Okay. Well, I mean, but you know, that part of your analysis was the fact that those people, those positions were going to be left vacant.
Right.
Okay, because that's a real key to it, because whether they were or they weren't is dependent upon each commissioner of each department, which gets back to my analogy, which is that you can have the program out there. It's not the employee's problem. First of all, they've got to take an interest in it and follow the program and pursue it, but it's really a management problem, and I think that that's what Senator Fakes was getting to, and actually it just depends on how that department head says, okay, I'm going to prioritize these things in my department, and maybe I have to eliminate this, and that's what it comes down to. So we may have a lack of, not a reflection on any of the people in the room, but we may have a lack of management from way, way up on the top down.
Yes.
And that's all I want to say.
Other questions of Mr. Walker? Did you have
No, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your work, too.
You're welcome.
On the audit. Sally, can we get you back up, and Mr. Stolnik? Did you want Bob up here?
No.
Oh, I guess. Senator Fakes?
Ms. Smith, through the chair, to the witness, we've heard Senator Ewing and I are kind of hung up on this management situation. Would you tell us what your instructions were as a manager in implementing this program? Did all you managers get together as a department or as a grouping and discuss this with the chief of staff or OMB? And how did you decide as state government managers to implement this program? What were the steps you went through?
Mr. Chair and Senator Fakes, this may be one of the more awkward spots of my career. I would like to go back over the fact that when this was implemented, there was a different governor, and I was in a different position. With that in mind, there were no instructions other than the bottom line had to show a profit to the state. The bottom line had to show a savings. The individuals within that designated organizational unit did not have to show a cost savings, only the bottom line. So one of the possible difficulties that could come out of it is the people that said they were interested in retiring or that you had in your designated organizational unit that cost would opt out, and the people that you were going to make your savings from stayed in. I was down in Plywood Palace at that time. I wasn't even near another director in state government except Department of Labor, with whom I had very little contact. And I guess out of that, I had a small division. As they say, I had a 36% savings over the course of my tenure. I had a 27% staff reduction. And I didn't rely on this for the management of my operation. It served me well.
So there was no goals and objectives, or program objectives, or management directives from on high that kind of descended down to you agency managers at a lower level? I guess it surprises me that there weren't some sort of policy calls from OMB or the chief of staff's office or the governor's office or somebody as to the direction this program should go for the overall direction of that administration's approach to life or approach to managing state government.
If I may put a tag end on it, Mr. Chair and Senator Fakes, I think there was a different mixture to consider. There had been a 15% across the board reduction without an attendant program reduction. And the focus of it was personal services.
I see.
So, you know, we were stuck. I had, I believe, 3 layoffs. I had, I think it was 3, maybe 4 retirement incentive situations. Mm-hmm. And attrition.
Okay.
And I personally had a 15% salary reduction. So it all fit together very well. I would like to say from a personal level, and again, this is rather awkward too. I don't think any of us, I don't want to put forth the idea that I am patently opposed to the retirement incentive program. I think it is a very good tool given all the right circumstances. I don't know that we've really had time as managers to know where it all fits in. And I think we would really like to see it considered as you look at this budget reduction and consider it in the scheme of an overall budget reduction. I don't think I'm really making myself clear, and I regret that. I think it can be considered along those lines. But to shape a budget reduction around it, with this as a focal point, that's where I have my difficulty as a manager, because that's what will get the emphasis, is the demand from people who want out of the system for their own reasons. And I may, as a manager, desperately need them, and I get caught in a rock and a hard place, and the budget reduction is not driven with the best interests of the people of the state of Alaska or the best interests of the programs I'm trying to carry out.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I know there's such a thing as the difference between the legislative branch and the executive branch, and I know a lot of us sometimes want to get in there and scurry around and try to tell the executive branch how to manage its functions, and we can't do that. Constitutionally, we're not allowed. So I am taking up the committee's time on something that we really effectively cannot deal with because of the separation of powers question. But I guess, Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to know is this is not meant to build the budget around. I mean, this is a tool. This is something special. It's an extra thing that managers can use to help produce better service for the people of Alaska in a low revenue situation. But it's not meant to build the budget around at all. It's an extra. It's an extra daisy on your desk in the morning. It's supposed to be a good thing for you. It could be a win-win situation for the manager and for the employees if you all are sitting down and talking, and if there's some direction from the OMB or somebody, the head manager, as to how this fits in. You guys have to make that decision. We can't. We're not your managers. Even though we'd love to sometimes, we can't because of the balance or the difference in the legislative branches. So I guess, Mr. Chairman, if it's appropriate, I'd like to hear from OMB or the chief of staff or somebody who is supposedly a head manager here as to their ideas on the implementation of this program, their general goals and objectives as to how this would fit in as an extra tool for them, and their suggestions on the management objectives of this thing. I mean, this is meant to be a plus, not a minus. It's not meant to be a hassle, even though you get paid more to make these decisions. You get paid more to pick between your employees based on program objectives, I would think. I mean, that's why you're the director and they're just sitting there at their computer. So the monkey is on your back. But I don't blame you. You've got to have some overall direction, I would think, from somebody up there to help you.
Senator, you
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Fix makes a good point. Selling, of course. I was just thinking, you know, you mentioned that, you know, in the department that you worked in before, that there was like a 36% cost savings that you foresaw there. Why was there a cost savings there when we've seen other government agencies completely, you know, go up as far as employees, go up in the numbers and everything else? What was your secret?
Mr. Chair, through you to Senator Ewing, I'd love to say it's because I was a wonderful manager. I think some things came together luckily for me at all the right times. That's from personally speaking. This was my division alone. But I think we also looked for other efficiencies. With that smaller division, I had an opportunity to consolidate paperwork. I had an opportunity to consider eliminating processes and still get to the end product. And of course, many of you know that the ultimate end product is that division no longer exists and the component parts have been put into other agencies. I would say it was a great success in how government can be reduced and programs can be saved. I have felt in the last couple of years that government is operating at the absolute edge. For instance, that agency could not have been reduced further and still functioned, so its component parts had to be divided out. And many of the agencies are operating at critical levels.
So, Mr. Chairman, along with that, so it's really a prioritization of programs and how the commissioner or the designee or the manager of that department determines what are the crucial things that we're going to address, because obviously we can't afford it all. Somehow there has to be a priority that's set up.
That's correct, and I believe that some of the agencies are even having problems meeting their statutory responsibilities.
So we have to relook the statutes. Maybe we don't need to have all those statutes on the books. But let me get back to the bill, because we are straying from the bill. And I'm just going to ask one last question. I know that it's getting late. We've been here in 2 or 3 hours.
No, just 2 hours.
2 hours. The bottom line is...